sahanau bhunaktu sahaviryam karavavahai tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Page 54. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, in response to the request of Maharaj Chitraketu, Angira Rishi, who was born of Lord Brahma's mind, was very merciful towards him. Because the sage was a greatly powerful personality, he performed a sacrifice by offering oblations of sweet rice to Tvashtha. O Purkit Maharaj, best of the Bharatas, the remnants of the food offered in the yajna were given by the great sage Angira to the first and most perfect among Chitraketu's millions of queens, whose name was Kritadyuti. Thereafter, the great sage told the king, O great king, now you will have a son who will be the cause of both jubilation and lamentation. The sage then left without waiting for Chitraketu's response. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, the sage thought, why should I tell him now how his son will be the cause of joy and sorrow? The king will know this at the birth and death of the child, but it is necessary to say unwelcome words now, because in the future the king will reproach me. Without telling me the truth clearly, he left. The king thought, because my son will have many good qualities, he will give joy. Because I will not be able to control him, since he will have more power than me, he will bring grief. Let that be, I will tolerate that grief. Thus the king became happy. Because if he explained it more, then he would be even more of a problem. Right? Srila Prabhupada adds, the king was overwhelmed with joy when he understood that he would have a son. Because of his great jubilation, he could not actually understand the statement of the sage Angira. Right? He wasn't listening carefully and was not trying to actually understand what he meant. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued, As Kritika Devi, after receiving the semen of Lord Shiva from Agni, conceived a child named Skanda, Kartikeya. Kritadyu, having received semen from Chidraketu, became pregnant after eating remnants of food from the yajna performed by Angira. After receiving semen from Maharaj Chitraketu, the king of Surasena, Queen Kritadyuti gradually developed in her pregnancy. O King Parikit, just as the moon develops during the bright fortnight. Verses 32 to 61. King Chitraketu's jubilation and lamentation. So now we get the explanation. Thereafter, in due course of time, a son was born to the king. Hearing news of this, all the inhabitants of the state of Surasena were extremely pleased. King Chitraketu was especially pleased. After purifying himself by bathing and by decorating himself with ornaments, he engaged learned Brahmins in offering benedictions to the child and performing the birth ceremony. Unto the Brahmins who took part in the ritualistic ceremony, the king gave charity in gold, silver, garments, ornaments, villages, horses, and elephants, as well as 60 crores of cows, 600 million cows. As a cloud indiscriminately pours water on the earth, the beneficent King Chitraketu, to increase the reputation, opulence, and longevity of his son, distributed like rainfall all desirable things to everyone. When a poor man gets some money after great difficulty, his affection for the money increases daily. Similarly, when King Chitraketu, after great difficulty, received a son, his affection for the son increased day after day. The mother's attraction and attention to that son, like that of the child's father, excessively increased. The otherwise, seeing Kritadyuti's son, were very much agitated, as if by high fevers, with the desire to have sons. as Chitraketu fostered his son very carefully, his affection for Queen Kritadyuti increased, but gradually he lost affection for the other wives, who had no sons.
Right, so here's technically the mistake. Right? It's natural that she has sons they all desire, but at the same time, it's if one queen has a son, they all have a son. So in that way, they can all be happy. But how he's dealings with everybody, that should remain the same. But instead, he only focused on the first queen and neglected all the others.
The other queens were extremely unhappy due to their being sonless. Because of the king's negligence towards them, they condemned themselves in envy and lamentation and lamented. A wife who has no sons is neglected at home by her husband and dishonored by her co-wives, exactly like a maidservant. Certainly such a woman is condemned in every respect because of her sinful life. Even maidservants who are constantly engaged in rendering service to the husband are honored by the husband, and thus they have nothing for which to lament. Our position, however, is that we are maidservants of the maidservant. Therefore, we are most unfortunate. In his purport to verse text 40, Srila Prabhupada writes, as stated by Chanakya Pandit, Mata yasya grihe nasti, bhartya chapriya vadini, aranyam tena gantavyam, yataranyam tata griham. A person who has no mother at home and whose wife does not speak sweetly should go to the forest. For such a person, living at home and living in the forest are equal. Both of them will be a problem. Similarly, for a woman who has no son, who is not cared for by her husband, and whose co-wives neglect her, treating her like a maidservant, to go to the forest is better than to remain at home.
So, in other words, a family life is supposed to be, everything's supposed to go nice. If not, then one retires from family life. It's not going to work, one retires. That's the whole point.
Okay, so the maidservants, because they're not expected to have children, so therefore they're rendering service, so they'll always be respected.
But then the problem is when the co-wives, if one has children, the other doesn't, then the one who has will get more attention, and the others will respect her better. And the one who doesn't, then they'll always give trouble. Right? So therefore, at this point, if the wives had gone to the forest, probably things would have worked out better, but they didn't. So it's not going to end up Chitraketu will go to the forest.
Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, being neglected by their husband, and seeing Kritadyuti's opulence in possessing a son, Kritadyuti's co-wives always burned in envy, which became extremely strong. As their envy increased, they lost their intelligence. Being extremely hard-hearted and unable to tolerate the king's neglect, they finally administered poison to the son. Unaware of the poison administered by her co-wives, Queen Kritadyuti walked into the house, thinking that her son was sleeping deeply. She did not understand he was dead. Thinking that her child had been sleeping for a long time, Queen Kritadyuti, who was certainly very intelligent, ordered the nurse, "My dear friend, please bring my son here." When the maidservant approached the child who was laying down, she saw that his eyes were turned upwards. There were no signs of life, all his senses having stopped, and she could understand that the child was dead. Seeing this, she immediately cried, "Now I am doomed," and fell to the ground. In great agitation, the maidservant struck her breast with both hands and cried loudly in regretful words. Hearing her loud voice, the queen immediately came, and when she approached her son, she saw that he was suddenly dead. In great lamentation, her hair and dress in disarray, the queen fell to the ground unconscious. O King Pariket, hearing the loud crying, all the inhabitants of the palace came, both men and women. Being equally grieved, they also began to cry. The queens who administered the poison also cried pretentiously, knowing full well their offense. When King Chitraketu heard of his son's death from unknown causes, he became almost blind. Because of his great affection for his son, his lamentation grew like a blazing fire. And as he went to see the dead child, he kept slipping and falling on the ground. Surrounded by his ministers and other officers, and the learned Brahmins present, the king approached and fell unconscious at the child's feet. his hair and dress scattered. When the king, breathing heavily, regained consciousness, his eyes were tearful and he could not speak. When the queen saw her husband, King Chitraketu, merged in great lamentation and saw the dead child, who was the only son in the family, she lamented in various ways. This increased the pain in the cores of the hearts of all the inhabitants of the palace, the ministers and all the brahmanas. The garland of flowers decorating the queen's head fell and her hair scattered. Falling tears melted the collyrium on her eyes and moistened her breasts, which were covered with kumkum powder. As she lamented the loss of her son, her loud crying resembled the sweet sound of a kurari bird. Alas, O Providence, O Creator, you are certainly inexperienced in creation. For, during the lifetime of a father, you have caused the death of his son, thus acting in opposition to your creative laws. If you are determined to contradict these laws, you are certainly the enemy of living entities and are never merciful.
Right, so this would have been quite early also in the creation. So generally these things would never happen. Right, nowadays, you know, it shouldn't happen. No one expects it to happen. If it does happen, it happens. But previously it just didn't happen. You know, it wasn't considered.
Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates on the queen's mentality. The cause of lamentation is the Lord. The cause of him doing this is his foolishness. She gives the Lord some advice for his own benefit, so that he will not repeat what he has done. The Lord is inexperienced, childish, because he has improperly made his own creation. Apratirupam. How is it improper? While the elder lives, the child dies. There's a problem in the creation if the elders cannot create and the children die. If you think that now you will do everything in an opposite way during creation, then you are certainly our enemy, Paraha. Doing what is wrong for you to do, you also show that you are inimical to us by making us suffer.
Srila Prabhupada adds, this is the way a conditioned soul condemns the Supreme Creator.
When he meets reverses, sometimes he accuses the Supreme Personality of Godhead of being crooked, because some people are happy and some people are not. Here the queen blames Supreme Providence for his son's death. Following the creative laws, a father should die first and then his son. If the creative laws are changed according to the whims of Providence, then Providence certainly should not be considered merciful, but must be considered inimical to the created being. Actually, it was not the Creator, but the conditioned soul who is inexperienced. He does not know how the subtle laws of fruit of activity work. Without knowledge of these laws of nature, he ignorantly criticizes the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So it's actually the living entity, because all these things happen because of a reason, you know, to do with us in the past. And so therefore there's reactions. Right? So that's, you know, how it's understood. Right? Not that it's, you know, how you say, the Supreme has made a mistake here. Queen Kritadyuti continued lamenting, my lord, you may say that there is no law that a father must die in the lifetime of his son, and the son must be born in the lifetime of his father, since everyone lives and dies according to his own fruit of activity. However, if fruit of activity is so strong that birth and death depend upon it, there is no need of a controller or God. Again, if you say that a controller is needed because the material energy does not have the power to act, one may answer that the bonds of affection you have created are disturbed by fruit of action. No one will raise children with affection. Instead, everyone will cruelly neglect his children. Since you have cut the bonds of affection that compel a parent to raise his child, you appear inexperienced and unintelligent.
So it's either, you know, they're working upon, how you say, you know, the fruit of activity they're working, but if the fruit of it is the main thing, like Jaimini says, then there's no need of really of a creator, because the laws themselves will make everything work. But if not, if it's dependent upon the creator, then why would he, cause a disturbance in the fruit of actions that therefore the children will be I say. The fruitive can't be the stronger one, because then everyone will just be absorbed in the fruitive. Right? So it has to be the weaker of them. It has to be the Lord as the superior one. Right? Because otherwise people won't worry about the kids and that. They'll just worry about their activities. Right? But then that means then the Supreme is there. And then, of course, according to her vision, he's at fault.
Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur continues his elaboration on the Queen's mentality. The Lord may counter, "What is my offense since I only gave birth and death according to a jiva's karma? There is no law that while the son lives, the father dies, or that after the father dies, the son should die, since it depends on karma." To which the Queen retorts, "Then let birth and death happen by karma, but then what action do you perform?" To which the Lord questions, "How can all this be accomplished by insentient karma without my control?" The Queen admits, "True, it is accomplished by you, but you have created bonds of affection for increasing your creation, and you cut those bonds. Seeing such misery arising from affection, who will have affection for the children? And without affection of children, how will they survive? You are certainly a fool because of this fault in your creation."
Right, so since he's the one controlling it and all that, he's created affection. Because of this affection, then people are raising their children. But if they see there's going to be so much misery, then people will not get involved in the children, right? Because then, you know, the anxiety of liberation and that will be more prominent. Right? So then he's saying, so therefore, there's a problem here. There can be. It doesn't necessarily. That point doesn't matter. The point that's important is that these things are coming up in the why she's thinking this, and then there's this thought, and then there's that. So the point is, Super Soul is presenting all these now. Whether she understands them as Super Soul or not, that's another thing, because it's not said here that she's a realized devotee. So.
Seems that Gandhari also almost saying basically because when she lost her sons.
Yes, it's always someone else's to blame. When things are going great, then they don't worry about Krishna. It's not that Dhritarashtra and Gandhari were so worried about, when things were going nice for the sons, and what does Krishna think? Right? And now it goes the other way. So that's just generally the thing. Someone else is at fault.
Can we do both?
Sorry?
If we do both.
Both means?
Like, you're happy for Krishna, and then you lament and you blame Krishna also.
I see. No, but when one's happy is when seeing it all in connection to Krishna and trying to engage everything in Krishna's service.
Yes. And then you said,
but is that also as yeah, or is that more focused?
It should be less focused.
Yes, so that's the whole point with cultivation. The other one can also develop.
Because that's mixed devotion service.
Yes, because one's thinking it's because, in other words, one's desires is what one's looking for.
It's
just you involve him in the lamentation process.
Yes.
Yeah. But the point is he's there. Yeah, so then probably been through it a few times, right? As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Karmani Nirdadhati Kintu Chabhakti Bhajam, Brahma Samhita 554. One who is taken to Krishna consciousness, devotional service is not affected by the results of karma. In this verse, karma has been stressed on the basis of karma mimamsa philosophy, which says that one must act according to his karma and that a supreme controller must give the results of karma. The subtle laws of karma, which are controlled by the supreme, cannot be understood by ordinary conditioned souls. Therefore, Krishna says that one who can understand him
and how he is acting, controlling everything by subtle laws, immediately becomes freed by his grace. That is the statement of Brahma Samhita. Karmani nirdathati kintu cha bhakti bhajam. Brahma Samhita 5:54. One should take to devotional service without reservations and surrender everything to the supreme will of the Lord. That will make one happy in this life and the next. Queen Krita Dyuti continued, "My dear son, I am helpless and very much aggrieved. You should not give up my company. Just look at your lamenting father. We are helpless because without a son we will have to suffer the distress of going to the darkest hellish regions. You are the only hope by which we can get out of these dark regions. Therefore I request you not to go any further with the merciless Yama. My dear son, you have slept a long time. Now please get up. Your playmates are calling you to play. Since you must be very hungry, please get up and suck my breast and dissipate our lamentation. My dear son, I am certainly most unfortunate, for I can no longer see your mild smiling. You have closed your eyes forever. I therefore conclude that you have been taken from this planet to another from which you will not return. My dear son, I can no longer hear your pleasing voice." 56-58. In his commentary to verse 56, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes, "The mother thought, why am I gossiping with the foolish Lord? Why do I not think of the benefit of my son? Then she cries out, O son, by you we could cross the hell which is dark and difficult to cross over. The son answers, but Yamaraj is taking me to his city. What can I do? The queen insists, do not go with merciless Yamaraj." Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Accompanied by his wife, who was thus lamenting for a dead son, King Chitraketu began crying loudly with an open mouth, being greatly aggrieved. As the king and queen lamented, all their male and female followers joined them in crying. Because of the sudden accident, all the citizens of the kingdom were almost unconscious. When the great sage Angira understood that the king was almost dead, in an ocean of lamentation, he went there with Narada Rishi." 59-61. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes, "Understanding that all the citizens had lost consciousness and were without a leader since Chitraketu was almost dead, the sage went there." Okay, important verse. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:14:5. Muktanam api siddhanam narayana parayana. Su durlabha prasantatma kotishvap. Maha Mune. O great sage, among many millions who are liberated and perfect in knowledge of liberation, one may be a devotee of Lord Narayana or Krishna. Such devotees who are fully peaceful are extremely rare." Maharaj Purkit. Just the rareness of devotees, yes.
The first time in Antioch, the king was not able to hear any yes or
no. Appears not. No, it's just a matter of what he can do, because see, is the problem is soft preaching is one of these politically correct terms, so it can mean anything anybody whimsically likes. So therefore, if you point out a glory in soft preaching, yes, see, soft preaching, if you point out a fault in it, then, well, that's not, you know what I'm saying, so it doesn't have any definition. There's preaching. So you preach according to the nature of the person at the time, at that moment, what they can understand, what they can hear, how they can hear it, that's what you do. To make it just a system that this is how it's done, you know, and then formalize that and say this is soft preaching. How is that individual? That's very impersonal. You know what I'm saying? That's the problem, is modern is impersonal. Say what you like about it, it's all about the individual. It's all about the generic concept of individuality. It's not about any person. Like that. So that's the difficulty. It said, oh no, this is the form, but that's the whole point. Why is it always these formulas that we make up? why it's not formulas that the acharyas give? Why don't we see that? You know what I'm saying? It's just like, just say for example only. We have Prabhupada speaks out, okay? So there's where someone makes a point, you know, they're arguing and Prabhupada defeats the point very nicely. Okay, so that's an important thing. And how he does it, it works very well. And the person is very pleased, listens, and there's an effect. But all the other aspects of how Prabhupada also preaches, when he's stronger than that, softer than that, how he deals, that we never make a study. There is no study. Right? And then something like, what do you call it? What is that? Spiritual dialect, what is it? By dialectics. So devotees may look at it, but generally they kind of put it on the side because the philosophies of the modern philosophers isn't exactly properly presented. So we drop the whole book. As if the philosophers themselves actually have any value at all. Right? You know what I'm saying? They're mental speculators. They have no more value than any other idiot on the planet. Just they're a little more... The modes of nature allowed them to present their idiotness more clearly. That's all. Right? Most people can't even articulate their stupidness. These people can. Through the modes of nature. It's not that they made it up. There's something special and great. In other words, all bogus philosophies have always been there. And just now and again, it pops up again during the modes so that people can take advantage of it. Right? You wanted to be stupid, so therefore, but you can't justify it, so someone comes up with a philosophy that now you can say, yes, see, I could be stupid. Right? What's missed is that any point that's made there is part of some philosophy. Whether it's from that one or from someone else or this or that, that doesn't matter. Name me how many devotees know all these philosophies and actually could deal with them. One, two. But how Prabhupada deals with the particular point, that's 100% accurate. If this point is made, this is how you respond. Now that study, that's a value. It doesn't matter if that's this one's philosophy, that one's philosophy, because who's going to talk purely one person's philosophy? That person spoke it, but everyone else, you know, goes out, you know, and does their potpourri. You know, picks one something from here, from here, from here. And then, you know, so the person, anyone we're going to meet is speaking a mix of philosophy. So it doesn't matter who it's from. So Prabhupada's already given such a nice way. Prabhupada specifically wanted this to be done. If the devotees weren't prepared enough to present it so it's academically acceptable, fine, but Prabhupada's prepared. And what Prabhupada gave is real. And anybody who doesn't agree with that, we kick on their face. You know? We mean that. You know? It gets very tiring hearing people with lack of faith, lack of intelligence, lack of training, lack of culture make comments. So Prabhupada, he knew how to preach. So that's why it's called thunderbolt and rose. Sometimes it's strong, sometimes it's soft, sometimes the middle, it's a mix. That's preaching. This thing, oh no, it must be always rose, because, you know, as if the modern culture is so rosy. Tell me what's rosy about the modern culture. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's struggling for existence. There's no difference today between the people and go back a few hundred years and when they were serfs shoveling cow dung. They're struggling just as much. Just they just don't have any cow dung on them now. That's the only difference. So the point is there's preaching. And this whole politically correct nomenclature of soft preaching, that's a misnomer. All it means is that it's a niche preaching, but they try to make it look like that's all the preaching. Just like, let's say someone's preaching at prisons. It's a particular kind of preaching and a particular thing. Now, if you say that that's the way to preach everywhere, so if they use soft preaching in a certain environment, there's people that go to that environment. So that's preaching to that particular group. Whether they could use that anywhere else, that is highly doubtful. And most likely, those who are successful, they don't use the same preaching way everywhere they go. Depending upon the individual, they'll adjust. That's why they're good preachers. Whether they're conscious of it or not, that's a whole other topic. But the point is to formalize and say, no, we can only do this, we can't talk Krishna consciousness. That's for the faithless. And I say that also boldly. That's for the faithless. Preaching has been established by the acharyas, that is done according to who you're talking to. And then to categorize everybody that everybody is West Coast American, that's just downright wrong. Most people in the world actually don't like Americans. They may like some of the, you know, their fast foods and this, but they just don't like Americans, really, literally. You know, Americans don't like anybody else either. They got a president of Canada that's talking about building a wall between America and the next country over. So, you know, they've never liked anybody else either, even though they're made up of everybody else. That's the fun part. America is you take the whole world and melt it into one pot, that's an American. You know what I'm saying? No one likes them. But somehow or another, then that's the way you have to preach. It's just pure nonsense. Yes, it's certainly you speak a certain way with some people, another way with another. That's understood. That's preaching. But then to have to say that's soft preaching, and then if you're strong, or if you give the philosophy, that's hard preaching. This is just mundane. This is just duality. This is not spiritual in the least. You preach according to the nature of the person. Some people like it really straightforward, like the straight edge. The straighter and more heavy it was, the more they're smiling. But you just go next door to the emos, you have to be as soft and gentle as possible. So the whole point is the real point is how to say Vedanta in, you know, either Thunderbolt Rose or whatever mix it is. But if you're not speaking Vedanta, you are not preaching. It's that simple. Otherwise, where are all the devotees? People who do talk straight, they make devotees. And everybody else, a few nice yogasans, little interest in Ayurveda or astrology, but no one really interested in pure devotion. Because as soon as you talk about pure devotion, they immediately oppose. Oh, you can't talk like that. Oh, nobody's going to do that. This, that, you know, so it's like, hey. Yes. Yes. So therefore he wants a son. That's all that's going to work. But the point is then if he gets a son, he's so happy and all that. When he loses a son, that's so much problem. Right? So it's even from the sage, they're not going to hear anything. Are they going to listen to the sage? He tells them about the material world and this. They're not going to listen either. Point is, they're so attached, they're not going to listen to anybody. Who are they going to listen to? Their dead son. And what's going to be the first point the son makes? You say, you're my parents. Which ones? I've had millions of them. Which ones are you? That puts things into a sobering light. You know what I'm saying? So, the whole point is if he knows everything before, he knows all this also. So he knows this is the only way it'll work. Like I remember one devotee parent telling me that, you know, they became a devotee, the parents don't really like it, this, that, oppose, you know, all this, that, you know, they talk about vegetarian, they're always opposing, this, that, blah, you know, just standard on and on and on and on and on, right? Then the grandchild is there, then now they, you know, start to visit, they want him to come over and all this and that. You know, but still it's always, you know, this, that, you know, just, there's, you know, relentless, right? Then one day when the kid's old enough to actually walk around, you know, I think like three or something, then the kid on his own, I think it was, I can't remember what it was, but they were in the kitchen, right? The grandmother, the mother, and then the child. The child went over to the refrigerator and opened the fridge and started screaming. And then they asked, what's wrong? He said, Grandma's keeping dead bodies in a refrigerator. Like that. Grandmother became vegetarian. You know what I'm saying? They were. So that's the point. The daughter's been discussing the whole thing for years. Mother's not listening, grandmother's not listening one bit. To the day she dies, she would not accept. Maybe when she's dying and knows she's dying, then maybe she'll relax a little bit. But up to them, nothing. Grandchild says, you listen. So, therefore, the sages are using that technique. This is preaching. So you find the method, the technique that works. You might find some patterns in that. It gives an idea to someone else to use, but that's not the system. When you try to make it, this is the system, you've already failed. Because people are people. They're not machines. So you as a person have to relate to the other person as a person. That's how it works. If you can do that, then that's fine. The only problem is the modern society is not based on relating to people as individuals. Relating to people as groups, you know, oh, an intellectual or, you know, this or that, that they can do. But actually as an individual, they're not very good.
Yes. Why is that?
Because the philosophy is impersonal. You know, oh, you have to be nice to everybody. Who's this everybody? You know, and then if I start listing positions, oh no, not them, what about, you know. So it's supposed to be nice to everybody except for all these guys. So that means, actually, I'm only going to be nice to this particular group. In other words, if somebody is generally intelligent, educated, liberal, you know, middle class, but doing, you know, fairly well, you know, not too aggressive or dynamic, but not too lazy, you know, and, you know, can, and has, can relate to authority issues. That's the group that we feel we can support. And somehow or another, that group is the whole world. Even though it's an extremely small group, that group. Like that. We'll even accommodate in a patronizing way, but we won't show it's a patronizing way. For those who are less intelligent than that or less situated, as long as they're nice and humble and respect us, then we'll deal nicer with them and be kind. And all that. They won't exactly be equals, but hey. So that's the whole point, is that this idea, this, it's so generic, it's not real. Because otherwise it would be nice all the time. But they're only nice if their group of people are they're interacting with. Is anyone else or not nice? Does that make sense? Yeah. So the whole point is this whole kind of modern view, it's always been there, it's always been a problem. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking about the emerging middle class and how because of that they're getting some opulence, they're becoming atheistic. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is talking about the emerging middle class and how that same thing is happening. Right? And then, you know, some, you know, 67, then the emerging middle class. Now they don't talk about it as much, but it's always the emerging middle class. In India now, the emerging middle class. You know, what is it? Expendable, what do you call it? You have money that...
Disposable
income. That's one of the symptoms of the emerging middle class. That's why they're, everyone talks about it. You make your money off of that. Right? The rich guys will buy stuff, but only that's, you know, they're very specific. They'll do a lot of research and buy, you know, like, you know. They'll buy their $1 million car, but they do a lot of research before they buy it. They want to make sure it's exactly the $1 million car they want. And the poor person also is going to be very, very careful and only spend as they need. So it's the guys in the middle that you make all your money off. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, they're brought out, they're glorified, they're encouraged, because that's where the economy is. But that mentality that makes them valuable for economic reasons is the very reason that they're useless on the philosophical level, on the social level, the personal level, all that. You know what I'm saying? This is very generic. Because depending on the region and all that, then they're much more interactive. As we mentioned, West Coast being, you know, that's taking place. People in the South, they're much more personal. They expect that. You go, you know, generally any country, the South is always more than the North. You know? Yes?
I was just mentioning this, that we do not disturb the fool.
We don't disturb the fool, yes.
But sometimes we treat it like...
Means you try not to disturb the fool, but the point is that is there. You know, you do your best. You know? Like that. The point is that, let us say there's an emergency. Let's say the doctor's walking down the street. All right? There's an emergency. There's an accident or something. He doesn't have all the facilities. He tries his best. Right? Only the envious will say, oh, you know, the patient didn't do so well. So it's not, where's the perfection? Where is the people that have come from good births, you know, Vedic upbringing, piety, that actually have, that actually even has two parents in the family, you know, and they're actually the ones that are connected biologically with them from his birth? You know what I'm saying? We just have to look around. How many are there? They're there. But it's how many have that? That they actually know how to raise kids. They interact. They do nicely with them. They put in the attention. Okay. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that where is this? They're interested. They have respect for authority. They're interested. They study the scriptures. They try to apply it in their life. They're not interested in karma and jnana, other than just, you know, what's left over from just being in the material world. But they try to see everything in connection with Krishna. There's a, you know, they follow the culture. So that's the problem. So you do your best, because you do not know how anybody's going to respond. You try at the time, but the more modern they are, the more they're able to hide what they're doing. You sit there, talk to them, they're smiling, they're this, they're interacting, you think everything's going nice. Then they go back and put on the internet, that was terrible, that was horrible, you know, there's this and that, and I was just waiting to get out of there. Who are the cheaters? Who are the cheaters? Somehow or another, they're the ones in truth and, not, you know, all this kind of stuff, but they're the ones that are the least straightforward. The guys that make all the politics, they'll never tell you to your face. Because the guys that tell you to your face, they don't have to make politics. They state their opinion, that's it, you like it or not, that's what they're thinking. But everybody else, it's all crocodile grins to your face and behind your back, then... And so therefore, as we discussed this morning, there is nothing that will make the modern culture happy. You have to preach to the soul. Because if you're preaching to, you know, that particular conditioning, how conditioned are you to that? You know what I'm saying? Because if that's the thing, then only a New Yorker should preach to a New Yorker. And that means the New Yorker from Manhattan should preach to someone from Manhattan. And even then, you know, are they from down in the financial district? Are they from Harlem? Are they from up in Spanish Harlem? Are they from the Upper East or West Side? And then they should just specialize there. So in other words, you should just preach within a few blocks of where you live. Because then only you can actually relate and actually get down. Otherwise, you try your best. Because the point is, you preach on the level of the soul, that'll work. You preach on some other level, maybe it'll work, maybe it'll not. The influence of the chit potency is wondrous, so even despite us, it has its effect. But if we're going to bring preaching into the context of politicalness and social context of the modern value system, we've already been defeated by Kali. He's already won. That's all he needs for the preachers of Krishna consciousness to simply be bodily conscious. And it's not even bodily conscious on the Vedic standpoint. He can get you there, but he can really get you if you use the modern. Because the modern is so whimsical, no authority, only feelings, and that's it. Saying what we think with?
Culture?
Point is to say it in a cultured way, yes. It means you have an audience there, you have to respect the audience you're dealing with. So you say it in language they'll understand, examples that they'll appreciate, but you try to say what you want to say. They can't, appreciate that, then why speak? Then you just listen and wait for an opportunity. Point is, this preaching is very simple. Like that. We make it complicated. And complicated does not mean sophisticated. It just means complicated. Sophisticated is actual culture. Not this put on that I read it in a book culture. Or culture because I read it on a blog somewhere. Okay. Chapter 15. The saints Narada and Angira instruct King Chitraketu, Pratigya. Only one who is actually eager to receive knowledge to eradicate the darkness of ignorance is eligible to approach a guru or spiritual master, right? So that answers the question. So he wasn't eligible before. Right? Only one who is actually eager to receive knowledge to eradicate the darkness of ignorance is eligible to approach a guru or spiritual master. Because here it is, a great sage, they have austerities and everything like that. So they could give you transcendental consciousness, but instead they just ask for material benefit. It's an opportunity, maybe they'll take it. So you have to just, that's what he said, he had nothing to do, so he thought, hey, let's drop in on, and see how this guy's doing. Because you have someone like this, he's administering the whole world. That means if he's Krishna conscious, then the whole planet will be Krishna conscious. And if he's not, they won't. That was the problem with Duryodhana. Duryodhana was not a bad manager. He was just not Krishna conscious. So if there was no other king around, and there was no Yudhishthira, then Duryodhana being king would be fine. It would have been a pleasant kingdom. It would have gone on nicely. Everyone would have been okay, and he would have died, they would have died, and that would have been it. Right? Nothing to write home about. Like so many kings we go through, this one and that one and this one, he would just been another name. But because Yudhishthira is there and he could do, then why would Duryodhana be there? But the problem is Duryodhana, if Yudhishthira is not there, he would have just been okay. But because Yudhishthira is not there, then it divides then into the divine and the demoniac. Does that make sense? And so then that's a problem. One could say, well, therefore, then if Yudhishthira is not there, everything would have gone fine. But what's fine? If everyone just is born, they live their life and die, then what's the big deal? You know, moths do that. You know, the bugs around your light bulb do that. You know, no more or less glorious, the same. So therefore, because Yudhishthira is that they could be Krishna conscious, that's the standard. Is that the demoniac nature should go away, the atheistic should go away, not that if the good goes away, then everything would be nice. Everything would be so peaceful if we're not so strong on Krishna conscious. This is peaceful. What peaceful? What does peaceful mean? What is peace?
Tamasic.
Yes, then it's tamasic. You know, don't chase the pigs out in the backfield and they're happy. Does that make sense?
The particular of this chapter is taken from Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 16. Chapter 15 summarizes questions and answers. Narad Muni and Angira Rishi posed a few rhetorical questions to King Chitraketu in verse 2, but they do not fall into this study. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 15th chapter, the two sages deliver the king from suffering, and Narad gives him instructions on a mantra. In this chapter, Angira Rishi, along with Narada, consoles Chitraketu as far as possible. Angira and Narada Rishi came to relieve the king from excessive lamentation by instructing him about the spiritual significance of life, because that's the only thing that will get rid of lamentation. The great saints Angira and Narada explained that the relationship between father and son is not factual. It is simply a representation of the illusory energy. The relationship did not exist before, nor will it stay in the future. By the arrangement of time, the relationship exists only in the present. One should not lament for temporary relationships. The entire cosmic manifestation is temporary, although not unreal. It is not factual, right? It's not factual meaning what we think it is. It exists, and that way it's not unreal. It exists, but it's not the reality that we make it out to be, you know? All whatever we define everything as, that's not there. Its only definition is actually how Krishna defines it. By the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything created in the material world is transient. By a temporary arrangement, a father begets a child, or a living entity becomes the child of a so-called father. This temporary arrangement is made by the Supreme Lord. Neither the father nor the son exists independently. Right? So the sonness, the fatherness, that's come from Krishna. So without Krishna, there is no father, there is no son. As the king listened to the great sages, he was relieved from his false lamentation, and he inquired about their identity. The great sages presented who they were and instructed that all sufferings are due to the bodily conception of life. When one understands his spiritual identity and surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Spiritual Person, one becomes actually happy. Right, because otherwise there's happiness, but it's temporary. So actual happy is connected to Krishna, because that's sustainable. That will last.
Right.
Yes.
The sages only instructed King Chitraketu as well, giving this
one. I'm sure they were all there, but the point is he'll be the one interacting. And you know, it's just like in the sages at Naimisharanya, then you have Shonaka, who then represents and asks the question. Like that, because they're all of the same qualifications. So then, naturally, then that one person, he'll be the most qualified. So he'll ask the best questions. Right? But when you have a general assembly, then you know everybody's got to ask their own questions, and one actually hopes that they actually know what their question is. Right? So, with practice, they start to learn. Right? So, like this morning, she asked a really good question. Right? You know what I'm saying? One sentence question. You know, got a 1 minute answer, very exact. That's all. It's just time, you know. So then you know what you're thinking, what you want. So here it is you had all the sages, they're all the same sadhana, same everything. So one person could lead and ask the questions and it'll work. That makes sense. So like this, then the king, he can ask all the questions, do all the things.
The great sages presented who they were and instructed that all sufferings are due to the bodily conception of life. One understands his spiritual identity and surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Spiritual Person. One becomes actually happy. When one searches for happiness in matter, one must certainly lament for bodily relationships. Self-realization means spiritual realization of one's relationship with Krishna. Such realization ends one's miserable material life. Shloka Anusharanam, summary of verses, verses 1 to 8. The rishis talk Shankya, 9 to 16. King Chitraketu accepts the sage's authority. 70 to 28, the rishis bring Chitraketu towards the Brahma-Bhuta stage. Right, so they talk of Shankya to analyze. Then he accepts their authority. Because otherwise, before that, he's just lamenting. They happen to come by. He's absorbed there. Then he accepts their authority as spiritual individuals. Right, then they can bring him towards the Brahma-Bhuta stage. Right, so unless the spiritual authority is accepted, one actually can't take advantage of the spiritual subject. So that's a problem we talk about. They'd be on the train or that, and they'd be the Hindus on the train. They come up and, you know, they need ask Prabhupada for blessings for the son to pass his exam, you know, next week, and, you know, other things like this. The, you know, business is a little down. Can you get some, you know, like this. Constantly a problem. Verses 1 to 8. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, while King Chitraketu, overcome by lamentation, lay like a dead body at the side of the dead body of his son, the two great sages, Narada and Angira, instructed him about spiritual consciousness as follows. O King, what relationship does the dead body for which you lament have with you, and what relationship do you have with him? You may say you are now related as father and son, but do you think this relationship existed before? Does it truly exist now? Will it continue in the future? In his purport to verse 2, Srila Prabhupada comments, the instructions given by Narada and Angira Muni are the true spiritual instructions for the illusion-conditioned soul. This world is temporary, but because of our previous karma, we have come here in accepted bodies. Creating temporary relationships in terms of society, friendship, love, nationality, community, which are all finished at death. These temporary relationships did not exist in the past, nor will they exist in the future. Therefore, at the present moment, the so-called relationships are illusions. Because right? They're here now, they won't be here.
We always stumble on the same thing. Because if we hear this, the natural inclination will go to impersonally. Because, you know, who are these people? But whenever they're in the past and they will never be in the future, and because we anyway don't have good relationships. So it's great.
Well, he has good relationships.
Yeah, not with all of them, apparently.
Oh, well, he doesn't know about the others yet.
But anyway, we do know. So, and then if we don't take this path, then we take the opposite one. This is it, that's what we have. We have to develop relationships with them, personal, and then we get deep inside into that.
Yeah, so, but the point is this, Krishna consciousness means it's the balance of the two.
Problem?
Yes, but that's why we sit and discuss these. You know, that's why Bhagavatam is heard day after day, so that we start to you know, accept it, start to identify with it, you know, start to contemplate it or practice it.
Because some things that are easy to accept, we accept.
Yes.
But there are some deeper things.
Yes, but that will also be different from individual to individual. Like that. So that's why the general instruction is there, and then how it comes up, then we take it. And also it's being the same things being said because it's important. Repetition means it's an important point. But the situation or the particular point will be slightly, you know, a finer or different. You know, there'll be some difference between it. You know, so it's just a matter of those areas that go easily, then that's very nice by Krishna's grace. But those who went a little tougher, then we know those are the ones we've been working on a little bit longer. You know, in other words, basically those are the ones that are keeping us here. And the other things we've picked up very recently. Otherwise, how do they go away so easily? Right? You know what I'm saying? You just take up chanting and all that, and so many just go away. You don't even think about them. Okay. So the ones that stick, those are the ones that you focus on. But then you should see what is the value. Why those ones? What is actually valued in those ones?
And I think that problems with certain people things that we like. Some people be nice naturally. Some people you're gay, neutral, whatever. And some people always bother you, or you always.
It just means that doesn't match the conditioning. That because we identify with the conditioning, there's a problem. We stop identifying with the conditioning, we won't have any problem. It doesn't mean that we necessarily work with them or that, because then the skills and all that must match, and there must be, you know, teamwork. Mm-hmm. You know, or we just have to be very humble and let them lead and feel that they're the Lord of the universe. You know, like that. But whatever, you just have to find what works. If it's important, then you make it work. And if it's not important, then you don't get involved.
And then you find always it's not that important.
Basically, yeah. We make it that it's important. So the point is all this importance can be engaged in the Lord's service. That's why the Shastra gives such a wide range of situations. It's how all these situations can be engaged in the Lord's service. So we look at it as a huge body of rules. No, it's just very wide range so that everybody in their situation can connect it to the Lord. So everybody doesn't use all the rules. But the rules that are connected with them, that's what they use. Yeah.
The rishis continued, O king, as small particles of sand sometimes come together and are sometimes separated through the force of the waves. The living entities who have accepted material bodies sometimes come together and are sometimes separated by the force of time. Footnote 18. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns this verse to Bhagavad Akramichimala, chapter 15, called Analysis of Favorable Conditions for Bhakti. Bhakti Anukul Vichar, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakura's book. Right, so in other words, seeing that with this mentality, that people just come together, they go apart, this is favorable for bhakti. Right? So that means then the opposite, what's unfavorable, would be thinking that, no, these situations are actually very important. Right? That this is family, this is the... No, it's just a matter... These are the ones that... This is situation you're in, this is where your service is, this is where you're applying. Srila Prabhupada comments... The misunderstanding of the conditioned soul is the bodily conception of life. The body is material, but within the body is the soul. This is spiritual understanding. Unfortunately, one who is in ignorance, under the spell of material illusion, accepts the body to be the self. He cannot understand the body as matter. Like small particles of sand, bodies come together and are separated by the force of time, and people falsely lament for unification and separation. Unless one knows this, there's no question of happiness. Because you can't be happy because everything that you like, you're going to be separated from, and everything you don't like, you're going to be put together with. Right? It's just the way it is, because the point is even if it's for a nanosecond, you don't like being together with anything you don't like. And unless it's, you know, anything less than forever, then it's a problem with those things you like. So even if you say 50-50, then it's, you know, you won't be satisfied. So unless one knows this, then only one could be actually happy. So. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita 2.13, this is the first instruction given by the Lord. Dehi no smin yata dehe, kaumaram yauvanam jara, tata dehantara praptir, dhiras tattara namuhyati. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. Right, so that we're not bewildered by as we grow up. You know, we won't be bewildered that you know, others pass into other forms, we'll pass into other forms. It means everything's changing. We are not the body, we are spiritual beings trapped in the body. Our real interest lies in understanding this simple fact. then we can make further spiritual progress. So this is the first point. So this should always be kept in mind. Everything else will develop from there. Otherwise, we remain in the bodily conception of life, our miserable condition, material condition will continue forever. Political adjustments, social welfare work, medical assistance, and other programs we have manufactured for peace and happiness will never endure. We shall have to undergo the sufferings of material life one after another. Therefore, material life is said to be dukkhalayama shashvatam, Bhagavad Gita 8:15. It is a reservoir of miserable conditions. Right? So,
that's right. So in this, we should be very comfortable because, how you say, we don't have to worry that we won't, you know, that there is not enough miserable conditions to go around, right? It's a reservoir. There's plenty. No one should be in anxiety. Right? Yes? Okay.
The rishis continued. When seeds are sown in the ground, they sometimes grow into plants and sometimes do not. Sometimes the ground is not fertile, and the sowing of seeds is unproductive. Similarly, sometimes a prospective father, being impelled by the potency of the Supreme Lord, can beget a child, but sometimes conception does not take place. Therefore, one should not lament over the artificial relationship of parenthood, which is ultimately controlled by the Supreme Lord.
Right. So the queen was lamenting about that, and she was acknowledging the Supreme Lord's involvement, but not necessarily from a very favorable point of view. Right. So here is pointing out is that the conception, it may take place, it may not, so we can't, it's all in the control of the Lord. So then what is, for the materialist, then depending on their previous actions, they'll get the results according to that. So if by their previous actions they're supposed to get a child, they will. And if they won't, they won't. So it's on their action, but it's still by the sanction and potency of the Lord. So karma itself doesn't take care, because it's dead matter. You know, it's inact, but so the Lord empowers, right? Does that make sense? But it's based on, that's why the Lord's not involved, though it's the living entities. He's simply fulfilling their desires. Does that make sense? So this idea that, no, I'm the parent, they're the child, but we're thinking we produce, but actually it's no, it's the Lord's potency produced. Because even the nature of children, that, you know, like they can write books on, you know, how the kid at a certain age will act. How is that? Why is there such a consistency? This is Krishna.
The rishis continued, oh no. Yes.
There is the tendency to don't accept bad things happening to the children because, well, there is one idea that they are like more pure. So
that means nothing will happen to them. You're in the material world. That's the whole thing. We're in the material world. That's why you have to be able to save the children from death. That means, or taking birth again. That's what we're supposed to do. You know, does that make sense? So that has to be trained. Now that they're more pure, they can learn that better. But go ahead, knock me out. How many parents are really interested in that? I find most parents are more interested in what kind of degree they'll get, what kind of job they'll get, how much money they'll make, what kind of girl they'll get, how much sex they'll have. Money, yes, of course. Money's important. But the point is it's not about saving them from death. If the kid, you know, somehow or another is interested in chanting, they're very happy because they're devotees. But there's a good chance most of the time it wasn't because of their effort. So in other words, they just give up and just stick to the eating, sleeping, mating, and defending part. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that one's in the material world. It's not a nice place. So one has to show them how to get out of the world. Otherwise, then they'll have to take birth again and go through the whole thing again. If you don't show them how to do it, when they grow up and they have their kids, they're not going to know how to do it for their kids. Does that make sense? Because it's all just, it happens. It's not that there's really a system to it. You know what I'm saying? So that's why, therefore, we focus on our duties. We do our duties, then we get the best we can. Because ultimately, it's a combination. There's our karma, there's their karma, and that's all controlled by the Lord. Does that make sense? So then we have to see, does it work out? But in any case, one has to become Krishna conscious. So it works nicely, then you're Krishna conscious, great. It doesn't work nicely, you're Krishna conscious, still works fine. But if you're not Krishna conscious, then even if things are going nice, you'll just become more attached, and then when they don't go nice, you'll more lament. Does that make sense? So just because you're more pure, it means that you don't have as many problems, but it doesn't mean you don't have any problems. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, okay, take just for that as your example, the second generation, how many desires do they have? Right? They're in the very specific areas. But take their parents, how many desires do they have? Way more. You understand? That's where the purity is. They have less material desires, but because they're less, they can focus on them more. You know, so therefore they get more distracting. The parents can't get anything together, so therefore they're not, you know, focused on anything. That makes sense? Yeah. So, like that. Srila Prabhupada comments, King Chitraketu was not destined to get a child by providence or the will of the Supreme, just as a sterile grain cannot produce more grain. A sterile person, by the will of the Supreme Lord, cannot beget a child. Sometimes a child is born even to an impotent father and sterile mother, and sometimes a potent father and fertile mother are childless. Indeed, sometimes the child is born despite contraceptive methods, and therefore the parents kill the child in the womb. In the present age, killing children in the womb has become a common practice. Why? When contraceptive methods are taken, why don't they act? Why is the child sometimes produced so that the father and mother have to kill it in the womb? We must conclude that our arrangement of so-called scientific knowledge cannot determine what will take place. What is enacted actually depends on the supreme will. It is by the supreme will that we are situated in certain conditions in terms of family, community, and personality. These are all arrangements of the Supreme Lord. According to our desires under the spell of Maya, illusion. In devotional life, therefore, one should not desire anything, since everything depends on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we're just surrendered to Him, doing according to what facility and nature we have, we engage in His service. That's what we do. And then all the other things, those will all be taken care of. Right? So grihasthas, they want facility, they make their endeavor, they get their facilities, they try to have children, and then, you know, if all these things work out, it works out. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. Like that, because there's nothing we can do about it. That makes sense. So that's the thing, is that if we start to see us from this is our duties and try to have the point of the inspiration that I do my duties, you know, just like we were saying before, is that why would someone act without attachment? But you can also be attached to the idea of performing duties. Right? That'll make the things work even if you're not attached to who's involved in the duties. Right? Because just because you're not attached doesn't mean one doesn't do a nice job. Yes?
There's something more than technology or whatever. There are many facilities like here with the yajna. Now people try different things if they cannot conceive. And sometimes they are successful.
But that's just because it's supposed to happen.
Would you consider this an over-endeavor?
No, not necessarily.
Maybe sometimes you see the children that are born from that. Not all of them are normal.
But even if it was right, they would have not been normal. In other words, you're supposed to have a normal or not normal kid. So whatever will cause that will...
Yeah, because their point is whatever comes by naturally by karma.
But you have to make your endeavor.
Yeah, so they say that's our endeavor.
You can try.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's a fair argument.
It's not so much a fair argument. The point is that we make our endeavor, whatever facilities, just like, okay, let us say we use a phone. We make a phone call. You know. So is that a fair endeavor? Previously, you had to write a letter. There was no phone. You know what I'm saying? So it's available. It's not against the principles. So, yeah, you could use it. You know what I'm saying? That makes sense. It's just, a bit different. You know what I'm saying? So the point is if it works, great. But the point is that still you have to be Krishna conscious, you still have to raise your children to be Krishna conscious. That doesn't change. So that makes sense. Yeah. The rishis continued, O king, both you and we, your advisors, wives and ministers, as well as everything moving and non-moving throughout the entire cosmos at this time, are in a temporary situation. Before our birth, this situation did not exist, and after our death, it will exist no longer. Therefore, our situation now is temporary, although it is not false. Means it exists, but it's temporary. Because otherwise, generally, if it's temporary, it's not real. But that's why we say that's the illusory aspect of it. It's not real. It's temporary. But it actually is happening within the Lord's material energy at this time. Text 5. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, not only is a dead son lamentable, wives, ministers, and relatives, all presently existing, are to be lamented. We are all situated here, now at one time, Tulya Kala. Before our birth and after our death, we do not exist. Even now, we do not exist. Things which do not exist in all three phases of time cannot be called substantial. That is the meaning. Pious persons do not consider insubstantial, impermanent objects. Though the objects are real, they are regarded as unreal because they are temporary. It means they exist, but they're not real because they're not going to be existing in the three phases of time. They're existing now. In the past they didn't, in the future they won't.
The rishis continued, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master and proprietor of everything, is certainly not interested in the temporary cosmic manifestation. Nevertheless, just as a boy at the beach creates something in which he is not interested, the Lord, keeping everything under his control, causes creation, maintenance, and annihilation.
Right, so the kid goes down to the beach, builds something in the sand, but he's not really cares about it. Because, they'll play with it, and then it's temporary, it'll go away, they'll go away. So that means kids at the beach have always built things.
He creates by engaging a father to beget a son. He maintains by engaging a government or king to see to the public's welfare. And he annihilates through agents for killing, such as snakes. The agents for creation, maintenance, and annihilation have no independent potency. But because of the spell of the illusory energy, one thinks himself the creator, maintainer, and annihilator. Verse 6, Srila Prabhupada comments. As an agent of the Supreme Doer, the Supreme Lord, one should abide by the law's orders. The present chaotic conditions of the world are due to the ignorance of leaders who forget that they have been appointed to act by the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
because they have been appointed by the Lord. Their duty is to consult the Lord and act accordingly.
The book for consultation is Bhagavad Gita, in which the Supreme Lord gives directions. Therefore, those who are engaged in creation, maintenance, and annihilation should consult the Supreme Person, who has appointed them, and should act accordingly. Then everyone will be satisfied, and there will be no disturbances.
Right, so we're in our positions because of the Lord giving that facility, that potency. So the Lord should be consulted on how we apply it. Right? It's just like, let's say we're given a job by somebody. We consult that person how to do the job. So if we get a job from somebody, and then we just do whatever we like whimsically, how can that be considered useful? So that's the problem with the modern society.
The rishis continued, as from one seed another seed is generated, O king, from one body, the body of the father, through another body, the body of a mother, another, a third body is generated, the body of a son. As the elements of the body, material body are eternal, the living entity appears through these material elements is also eternal. 7. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, what you said is true. I, a father, created by the Lord, produced a son who is now dead. Therefore I lament. The two sages respond, by the body of the father, the son, body of the son is born from the body of the mother, just as a seed is born from another seed. Since the body of the son which you produced is present before you, now why do you lament? This is the intention of the statement. But I am lamenting because the jiva is no longer present. They reply, the jiva is eternal. It is not produced by you. Thus you have no relationship with it at all.
So that's the whole point, is you don't need to lament because your body and your wife's body produce this third body, the son, and the body is still there. Why are you upset? Because it's the soul. So you had no part in that. Right? That's the...
The rishis continued. Divisions of generalization and specification, such as nationality and individuality, are the imaginations of persons who are not advanced in knowledge. Verse 8, yes.
In the case of Draupadi or Mahabharata, when the children were killed, they were suffering. And the Mahabharata is so much like pain.
Because that's what people, that's why people read Mahabharata. You know what I'm saying? Just like there is a channel on television that will tell you all about different animals in the world and what they do all day, and you can even watch a day in the life of that animal, right? Them sitting there in the grass and looking around. And then, you know, the wildebeest herd of them go by and they stand up and, you know, it goes the whole day. Huh? Yeah, whatever. It's just, you know, it's always happening. Right? So that's the whole point, is it's always going on. Or there's another channel wherein, you know, you have a situation, you know, whatever it is, somebody's house, a hospital, you know, something, and then a certain character is, and all the emotional turmoil and happiness and distress and insanity that they go through. Huh? Yes, you know. In other words, what would happen to 20 different families happens to them in 1 hour, yes. Right? So, we're interested in that. We're interested in all this. Does that make sense? No, but I'm saying, that's why Mahabharata is there. We'll read it because of that. And then into it, he tries to interject some proper understanding. Right? In other words, Mahabharata is soft preaching. You know? But how many people become devotees from Mahabharata? devotees read Mahabharata, but the problem is they don't necessarily. Devotees read it, but the others, they read it and it makes them religious. They get inspired in religiosity, but not in devotion. That's the problem. If it's too hidden, people won't know. So it has to be clear enough, just like Bhagavatam. It's clear enough, but it's nicely presented. That's preaching. You understand? So if soft preaching didn't work 5,000 years ago for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, why would it work for us? Because we have to remember, our Vyasadeva, Krishna Dvaipayana, is Vishnu Tattva. He's not Jiva. Right? Next one, or the one after, is Ashwatthama. He's Jiva. It's natural. There's relationships and this and that. But on their platform means we'll take it from our platform and apply it to our situation that we're attached and this and that. The point is that, you know, these are other personalities that you render service with and that. So you're losing the association of Vaishnavas. So then that's a problem. But for us, it's not Vaishnavas, it's just our family. You know, they happen to be Vaishnavas, but that's not why we're lamenting. Does that make sense? Okay.
Huh? What is this generalization and specification?
Generalization and specification. Oh, here, yeah. I was trying to figure out where we were. I was trying to think. Okay. So, such as natural and individuality.
So that's generalization and specification.
Yes. You have a nationality. Right? And then you have the specific individual from that
general specific, that's
what. Yes. That's all. Divisions of the... Because everything's like that. Yeah. You know, we're nice to... You know, we have love and affection for everybody in the world, all living entities, except that guy. Yeah, that's specification. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, since the soul is the partner with the temporary body, it should also be temporary. The distinction of soul and body, which seem to be mutually dependent, is produced from beginningless ignorance. Just as the division of generic, jati, and specific, vyakti, in the eternal Brahman is imaginary, since it cannot be discerned that they are mutually dependent. Right. So it appears so because they're there together. So you say if the body is temporary and the soul being dependent upon that, it should also be temporary. But that's where the lamentation comes, because the soul is eternal. Otherwise, if it was just dead matter and everything's dead matter, who would care? So, okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Prabhupada ki, Sarva Vita Bhaktivinoda ki, Chaitanya Gaura Vrindavan.